It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
We'll punch you in the nose for 60 minutes with a relentless competitive attitude.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
It is Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Thanks for being with us. Paul Dottino and Super Bowl champion punter Jeff Fiegel's with you. Our phone number for later on in the show is 973-667-1960, 973-667-1960. You can also hit us up on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat, and later on find the archive of this show and our entire podcast network, brought to you by Investors Bank on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at giants.com/podcasts. Before we get to your phone calls, though, however, Mr. Fiegels and I have a very special guest. He is Manny Navarro, the Miami Hurricanes beat writer for The Athletic, and obviously there are some very prime Hurricane prospects that are going to be entering the NFL draft very shortly, and we wanted to get Manny on to tell us something about those players. Manny, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. We hope you're well.
Hello, Manny.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, I guess we got to start right off the top. The edge rushers are clearly the interest for many teams when they talk about this Hurricanes program right now. We know that the Giants had head coach Joe Judge down there at the pro day. What can you tell us positively and negatively? Let's go through each one of these guys. We might as well start with Rousseau, because he's the guy who over the last several months seems to have gotten the most inquiries because of his physical prowess.
Yeah, definitely a big-time prospect in terms of potential and what I think he could be down the road. You know, Gregory covered him down here in Miami when he was playing high school ball. He was a receiver and a safety, and a guy who had never played defensive line before he got to Miami. And as soon as they got him, you know, the coaches said, "Hey, we want you to try, you know, edge rusher." And you know, first season gets hurt, I think, in the LSU game, the opener, and didn't really play much at all. Was injured the rest of the year. Came back, and immediately, the moment he stepped on the field, you could tell that this guy was special. Just the length and the wingspan, you know, being able to bring the quarterback down, get to the quarterback. And you know, to me, he's a guy that I compare very much to Calais Campbell, who's been in the league for a long time, who's been an All-Pro. And I actually spoke to Calais about Gregory Rousseau last year, and he talked about how he felt, you know, this kid was just like him. You know, he sees so many similarities in terms of, you know, how much more his body can grow, how much bigger he can get, and then also just how effective he is creating pressure, I think, from the inside out. I think he's a better interior pass rusher than he is on the outside, but I think with more coaching, a little bit more development, he's a guy that could really turn into a special talent at the next level.
Manny, before I let Jeff jump in here, you mentioned Calais Campbell. The name that we've heard up here in these parts, and maybe it's because we're in New York and New Jersey with the Giants, is Jason Pierre-Paul. That seems to be a comparison that's popped up an awful lot. Do you see those similarities, or maybe that's not really the case?
Well, when you go back and you study his 15.5 sacks from 2 years ago, 8 of them came from beating guards inside. You know, he's just, to me, his strength really is disrupting the middle of that offensive line and getting to the quarterback, putting his hands up, just deflecting, you know, passes, being a nuisance. You know, people down here at times have compared him to Ted Hendricks because of his size and just how long his arms are. I could see Pierre-Paul with some coaching. It's going to take him, I think, a little while. Again, he hasn't played defensive end very long, basically one full season. But the talent is there, and it's a matter of can you teach this guy what he needs to do to get the best out of him. And obviously the Giants have been such an incredible franchise over the years of developing pass rushers. I'm pretty sure they're not going to have a problem doing that.
Manny, so you know the Giants could use a rusher, edge rusher. The guy, anybody from Miami would be okay by me. Gregory has, you know, he doesn't have a lot of playing time. Obviously, he opted out last year, and so you know there's still some questions about that. Hasn't played a lot of ball in a while. What do you think? Obviously, we've been talking a lot about the positives. What are some of the things that scouts are seeing or maybe have been talking about that Gregory might have to improve on to be able to, you know, maybe be that first, you know, count on this guy being an edge rusher? I like him. I like the comparison to Calais Campbell, by the way, because I feel like he's a better inside guy than the outside guy. I think he struggles against those big offensive tackles. What are some of his weaknesses that he can work on when he gets to the next level?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. I think, you know, obviously developing the skills to beat offensive tackles, I think, is at the top of the list. And I would say also just being able to read the keys and be better at sort of diagnosing the run when it's coming at him.
Sure.
You know, obviously, again, he's just learning the position in my mind. Obviously, he's been training for a while, and, you know, everybody in the NFL wants him for a reason. But I, you know, Manny Diaz, the coach at Miami, has talked about it, you know, before Greg decided to opt out last year. It was just the fact that, you know, there were so many areas he felt he could still get better, especially against the run, setting the edge, so forth. So I think, you know, to me, if the Giants draft him or whoever drafts him, I see the first season as sort of a, hey, you know what, you're gonna have to wait for this guy to develop a little bit before he's really able to go out there and give you everything you want. And I think as long as the team that drafts him has a little bit of patience and is willing to put that time in, then he's a guy who I think is eventually going to get there in those other areas.
Paul, I'll go ahead and continue at the edge position. The other player that a lot of people are talking about is Jalen Phillips, another guy that's physically, he's got all the tools. He weighs a little bit more, but at 6'5", 266, I mean, physically moves around extremely well, comes off the ball really well too. I think that, you know, reading on his bio and just kind of following him a little bit, I think the one thing that people, and again, I don't know if he'll be there this weekend. They're having the medical checks this weekend in Indianapolis. The injury part of it, is that something that he can overcome? Is it something that was he just kind of bitten by the injury bug accidentally, or was it something that maybe people will be really concerned about?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you bring up concussions with guys, you always worry, right? I mean, that's something that unfortunately, for a guy like Jalen, that's part of his history when he got to UCLA. And then he was playing linebacker. I don't know if that made any difference for him. You know, maybe playing with his hand on the ground, he was less susceptible to it. But at Miami, I mean, he made it all the way through last season really without any injuries at all. He was able to sort of prove that, you know, he could stand up to it and give you 60, 70 snaps a game, which is what Miami basically did with him. They had him on the field at all times. But certainly in his history, you know, getting the moped accident that he had at UCLA when he was hit by a car and he injured his wrist. I mean, I'm sure all of that are going to be questions that NFL teams have. But having watched Jalen and getting to know him a little bit here at Miami in his time here, I can tell you, you know, the questions coming in were, well, how hungry is he for football? Because at one point he was contemplating quitting. The kid is certainly hungry to play football. He's certainly hungry to make his NFL dreams come true. And I think, you know, his work ethic, all the things that you want to see out of a guy from that regard, off the field, effort, how much he studies, he's got all that in his game. You mentioned the injuries. I think that's really the only thing at this point that NFL teams have to worry about with him. He's much more polished than Gregory Rousseau as far as pass rushing, in my estimation. I think, you know, the 4.58 speed, the athleticism. I mean, this guy does standing backflips. He just, the athleticism that he's got is just off the charts. And you know, to me, I at times, and as somebody else mentioned this too, is he looks like Joey Bosa. You know, the way that he plays the game, and that's really, you know, I think as long as he can stay healthy, he can have a really good NFL career.
Manny Navarro, the Hurricanes beat writer for The Athletic, joining us today on Big Blue Kickoff Live. One other follow about Phillips, Manny. I think technically he's very sound, so it's not just the athleticism. I think he brings a lot of polish to his game, which may make him the most pro-ready of the Hurricanes that we're going to talk to you about this afternoon. But I did question his power, and I know at his pro day that did show up. He only had 21 reps, which obviously for a guy who's going to play that position, you'd like to see him do some more. Did you see that at all as you watched him play out, become a bit of an issue?
I really didn't. There weren't many times where I said, man, Jalen Phillips got overpowered there. It was quite the opposite. I think His speed, obviously, is his gift, the way he can just get around linemen and how quick he is off the snap. But I think in terms of strength, there were never any moments where I said, man, you know, Jalen Phillips got whooped today. I just never saw that when he was playing at Miami. Obviously, it's a different animal at the NFL level. I would have loved to see him, you know, go up against some good guys at the Senior Bowl. Obviously, he didn't qualify for that yet. But, you know, I think he's a guy that I wouldn't worry too much about the bench press. Everything that I've heard from people at Miami is he is an absolute and total physical freak. And, you know, I know we can look at bench press rep numbers and say, man, you know, wasn't as good. I don't think he was necessarily focused on putting up a huge number. I mean, this guy, I think to him it was more like, hey, I got a bunch of NFL scouts here today. I'm more focused on just showing them what an athletic freak I am. And, you know, I think that was sort of his priority, his mindset going into the Miami Pro Day.
He played a lot with leverage, which, I mean, can really dictate into a lot of power when you go there because of his quickness, I see. In your mind, do you see one of these guys going one in front of the other, or do we have them where do we have them ranked where you think they are?
Well, you know, obviously everybody's ranked the edge rushers differently. I mean, I don't think there's one consensus true number one edge rusher in this draft. I think it's just more of a what an NFL team falls in love with. You know, I think again. To me, I think Rousseau is a guy that's going to take a little bit more time to develop. So
sure.
I could see him falling in the draft a little bit to a team that you know, is maybe willing and has the time to take, you know, a guy to develop. I think Phillips is a help you right away type of guy. So, where does that fall in the draft? I'm not sure. It's just going to be more about, you know, where I think an NFL team feels that they're at and what they need.
To a lesser degree, Quincy Roche is also a guy who's hoping to make a name for himself as an edge guy in the NFL. Certainly not the level of prospect the other two guys are, but what do you think his chances are of making an impact?
I love Quincy Roche. I love his energy, his effort, just the motor that he plays with constantly. Yeah, he's not as big as the other two guys, about 6'2", 6'3". 250 pounds, but when you watch him play, he really plays the game fast. You know, his speed really stands out to me. You know, I know some people have said he's probably going to play, you know, 3-4 outside linebacker type role. I think he could grow into that. I think with the right team, he's a guy who could certainly be a contributor, part of the rotation as far as edge rushers, and a guy that could play in the league for a while just because. You know, he was one of those two-star, nobody-offered-me recruits, so he's got a chip on his shoulder. You know, I thought, you know, Phillips was the number one defensive end in the country coming out of high school, five-star kid, and Rousseau was certainly recruited by a bunch of great schools. You know, this kid, Temple, was his only offer, and he basically worked himself into the transfer of Miami because of how well he played at Temple. So I think Quincy Roche is just one of those guys that, you know, maybe people didn't see as a great player, but he ends up becoming one of those players that makes a great career for themselves in the league because of how they work and how smart they are. And Quincy's a very smart guy, a very sharp guy. I think that's going to keep him in the league for a while.
Well, I'm looking at his numbers here as far as games played in the last 3 years. He really didn't miss much time at all.
No.
He seems to be a very healthy guy, which is going to be really good for him. You know, and somebody's going to – you know, really good, a nice player with him. I mean, you talk about how smart he is. You know, that makes a difference at the NFL level. You want to have guys that are, you know, they have that at football acumen that there's not a lot they have to really teach them. They understand the game quickly. And, of course, all people coming from Miami are smart guys, right, Manny? I mean, that's what I'm thinking. So as my two guys on the other line here are just rolling their eyes because it just so happens that we have Miami today, and I'm excited about this. So I'm going to move on to the offensive side and talk a little bit about the tight end. You know, Brevin is a guy that's, you know, he's 6'3", 245 pounds. He's very good has great hands. I think one of the knocks on him is maybe just he's not physically at going up and getting contested catches. Tell us a little bit about Brevin Jordan, where you kind of see him fitting in the draft this year and what's some good and bad things about him.
Yeah, I think, you know, much like Phillips, you know, the injury history I think is going to play a role for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's not 6'6", and, you know, with the huge wingspan like Pitts and some of the other guys in the draft. But I think Brevin's going to be a very good pro. I look at Jonnu Smith as a comparison for me. Jonnu's a guy who played at Florida International University down here in Miami, and he's obviously had himself a pretty good career. I make that kind of comparison with Brevin. You know, the one thing about him is he is tough. He's a guy who played in a system out in Las Vegas when he was coming out of high school with so many of the guys that are at Miami or played at Miami here in the last couple of years. And, you know, he didn't do a whole lot of blocking, so he kind of had to learn how to do that at Miami. And, you know, I think he's a pretty good blocker. I don't think he gets enough credit for the way that he blocks. And I would also say that, you know, in terms of toughness, you know, playing through a Liz Frank injury, you know, his sophomore season, finishing as a Mackey Award finalist, and then coming back, playing with dinged up shoulders. He's very tough, NFL tough, the kind of guy that, you know, is gonna be out there if he can. And you know, there were some games that he missed this year. The Clemson game, he got knocked out of that with a shoulder. He came back a couple weeks later. To me, I know NFL teams are going to look at his medical and say, well, that's the knock against him. But I kind of look at it the other way and say, you know, his toughness, you know, he hasn't had any major injuries. There have been nagging injuries, but they haven't been major, you know, where he's had to miss major time. So I think, you know, as far as talent, getting open and catching the ball, he's right up there with many of the other guys who have come out of Miami playing the tight end position. You guys up there obviously familiar with Jeremy Shockey and what he did for the Giants for so many years. I think Brevin, in terms of his hands and his abilities, receiving, he's right up there with Shockey and many of the other great tight ends that have come out of Miami. So he's just not as big as some of those other guys. So we'll see. You know, I think he's probably a second-day guy. And you know, whatever team gets him, I think as long as they utilize his skills to what he can do great, he's going to be a good player.
All right, final question for me, Manny, and it's a little bit more generic. We've talked about the skill sets of the guys that you know, have been on the field for the Hurricanes. Let me ask you about the off-the-field stuff. Phillips, Rousseau, Roche, the three defensive guys who are going to be coming off of the edge. Tell me about those guys in terms of locker room guys, in terms of leadership skills, in terms of maturity. Are those questions that are going to inhibit or perhaps give pro teams pause or cause for concern, or do these guys check all those other boxes as well?
Yeah, I don't sense any character off the field type issues with any of these guys. Rousseau, in fact, again, you know, he's a guy, both of his parents, Haitian American. I guess that's where maybe some of the Pierre Paul comparisons come in too, also being a South Florida guy with Haitian roots. You know, his parents are really, really hard workers. His mom was a nurse. His father worked for the fire department and the emergency personnel for many, many years. And those kids were alone by themselves in their house, and their parents expected them to clean the house, cook themselves dinner. These kids have been doing that since he was really, really young, just very mature, very bright in terms of Rousseau. Phillips, you know, comes from a family of musicians. He's got a grandfather who is a maestro with an orchestra and works at one of the universities down here in South Florida, running the music department. And, you know, he's a guy who at one point thought about getting into music and still has very much interest in that, but never had a problem off the field, never heard about anything, you know, him doing anything wrong whatsoever. I already talked about Roche, just how smart he is, and really, again, no incidents with him. And Brevin Jordan, you know, he's a mama's boy. You know, he really is. Him and his brother are very, very close. A good kid who's just focused on his career. So I know in the past there's been some guys that might have come out of Miami that you said, well, I don't know what they're doing off the field. I think all four of these kids, they're not from that problem tree whatsoever.
Great stuff. Well, Jeff,
can
go
I ask
ahead.
One more thing for Manny, because if we didn't ask about the specialists, we would be, you know, cutting this program very short. And the Miami Hurricanes have a field goal kicker. Is it Jorge Gales? Is that how you say his name, Manny? Did I get it right?
Jose Borgales. And
okay.
It's really, I mean, a great story of a kid who, you know, grew up playing high school ball here in South Florida, kicked for one of the inner city schools, and really didn't have many offers coming out of high school. FIU offered him, and he was just a phenomenal kicker there, and then comes over to Miami, wins the Groves Award, First time that's happened at Miami with all the great special teams players that Miami's produced,
sure.
Kickers, punters, and it, so just an incredible leg. And I'll tell you what, I don't know if you guys are scouting ahead to 2025 or anything, but his brother's even better than he is.
And so I know he's there, right? He's coming to Miami.
Yeah, he's at Miami now. Andres Bordalis. So I think we're going to see, we've seen so many kicking families in the NFL over the years, right? The brothers and so forth, and Dejas I can think of. I think you're going to see the Bordalis boys kicking in the NFL for years to come.
Well, I think the Giants are happy with Graham Gano for now, but in a few years, you never know. They could be in the market for a place kicker.
You never know.
I got one thing I got to debate with Manny. He said something about punters when he mentioned great specialists at Miami. I don't know. Was Spiegel's any good?
He was pretty good. Yeah, he was pretty good. There's no doubt he was pretty good. And incredible NFL career, man, and yeah, I mean, how could you not mention Mr. Spiegel's among the best?
I'll put it this way. I was better in the pros than I was in college. So, I was still kind of earning my, whatever. I was still learning, definitely learning when I was at Miami. And those were some fun days, I can tell you that. And some really good teams, by the way, when I was there. Not that I was any good, but the other guys were really, really good.
Spiegel's, I don't know if you could hang with the punter they got now. Have you seen this Aussie kid with all the
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, you don't get me started on Aussie punters, Manny. This is another program that we could keep going. They're taking over the world. They're like aliens, I swear to you. They're all over the place. He's good. He's really good. He needs a couple more tattoos and he'd be fine, so. He's got them all over the place. He looks like a Harley Davidson motorcycle rider, man. I'm telling you. But the guy's good. He can really he rolls out and he kicks that ball outside the numbers and has a really both those guys really did well last year for the Hurricanes, the kicker and the punter.
They did, and he's a guy who I think will be kicking in the NFL too. I mean, he's just first of all, just such an intimidating presence. I mean, if you're trying to go and block the kick, you're thinking about it twice because he might keep that ball and just run you over.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, my. Well, that is Manny Navarro, the Hurricanes beat writer for The Athletic. Manny, it's been a pleasure to talk to you today.
Yeah,
thank you so much for spending some time with us and giving us a preview on some of those Miami prospects coming into the draft.
Yep, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Manny. Thanks for coming on short notice. We appreciate it.
So the Miami Hurricanes have some interesting guys there, Jeff, and we got some good intel from Manny, who obviously has seen these guys play in and play out. And boy, if you just go by what he's telling us, there's a lot to like.
Well, I think that the Miami guys, they always come. Miami is Miami. It never really changes as far as what people, they look at Miami and say, oh, those guys are a bunch of, this and that. These are good guys. They're model citizens. You heard no off-the-field problems, so that's a good thing right away for me. But it doesn't surprise me because Miami is always putting out very, very athletic football guys, right? I mean, the guys are just they're freaks that come out of Miami. They're just the way it is. That South Florida football is these guys are just – they train hard. They're used to playing in hot weather. They grow up in it. It's just these guys are good, and I think they got a good handful of prospects here. It'll be very interesting for me, Paul, and this is why I kind of asked Manny the question that, who's going to go first? Is it Rousseau? Because, when you look at him, he hasn't played a lot of football. Man, I'll tell you, you look at all the other intangibles, it's hard to pass this guy, and then you look at the other ones, and I think that, it'll be interesting to me to see who goes first, either Rousseau or Phillips. But I think Phillips is a little more polished, and I think that Rousseau is raw. So that's the take on those guys.
Well, the Calais Campbell comparison was new to me. I had not heard anybody say that before.
But think about it. It makes sense, right?
It does. And so that was very intriguing. And I also thought that, for a lot of folks who maybe don't know a ton about Rousseau and they've just heard his name bandied about as the guy who might be the best pass rusher in this draft? And again, I'm of the opinion that this entire class of pass rushers is boom or bust.
Yeah,
I think they all have question marks written all over them, kind of like the Riddler does. And that's why it gives me pause to think that one of them is going to be the Giants pick at 11. But I do think that Manny, who has seen this guy play in and play out before he opted out this year, obviously only had one full year with the Hurricanes, Manny was very clear, okay, maybe the upside is there, but you're going to have to wait to see it. I mean, he couldn't have been more clear about that. If you pick Rousseau, Gregory Rousseau is a futures pick. He is not somebody who is going to be able to give you something right out of the box.
Well, if you want to go on the other side of the football, is this, and I know that the comparison, well, first round, third round, but Matt Parrott, right? I mean, there's a guy that the Giants took a high third round pick on him. What it was more of, he was termed a developmental player. Now, Gregory Rousseau, if you pick him in the first round, you're thinking that he's going to immediately play, which he will. But, you know, I tell you, Paul, you know this probably better than anybody. You've been around the Giants longer than any of us. The Giants like to draft Miami defensive linemen. They like those Miami guys. And for historically, you go down in the list and see the type of guys that come out of Miami. Giants have drafted a lot of them over the years. They really have. So we'll see.
I will say this, Jeff. You know, at number 11, and I think you're on the same page with me here, the Giants need to have conviction and they need to be assertive that the guy they pick at 11 is not just going to be good for the long haul, but they need that guy to be helping them right away. They need some impact at that number 11 pick. So for me, my line of thinking says, you know, the guy I got to wait for isn't necessarily going to be on the top of my want list.
One thing I do like, and I should have asked him yesterday because I saw him yesterday in town, is Coach Spencer. He lives in Ridgewood. I saw him downtown, and I didn't ask him about him. I would have loved, should have asked him because, you know, there's a coach that, I mean, he's got such a great way of coaching and getting these guys to play. Look what he did with that defensive line last year. Maybe that Sean Spencer could really be, you know, advantageous for a guy like Gregory Rousseau.
Yeah, Jeff, you could ask him about the Penn State guys too. See, this is how you know, Paul, that Jeff is still more of a former player than like a media guy. To pass up that opportunity because we don't see the coaches, we're not in that building. Jeff, you blew it. Let's be honest.
I blew it. Yeah, it's shame on me.
Yeah,
I feel like I've let the team down. our team. We're a draft central right now, and I have the prime opportunity to ask the defensive line coach for the Giants. And what do? I let you guys all down. I apologize. I'll hang up now. I'll go put my head in the dirt. Sorry, Paul.
You know what though, Jeff? he likely would have told you, okay, that Jalen Phillips is the most pro ready. And the most technically sound and the most advanced guy of all of the Hurricanes edge rushers. But you know what? That doesn't mean a hill of beans. Because if the medical staff says, we've got a few doubts about this, guess what? He comes off the board.
That's right.
It's just that simple. And that's why I love what Manny said about him, because we know he's a legit prospect. And I have heard the Bosa comparison. Mm-hmm. I've heard that before. That's not the first time somebody has said to me, boy, he kind of reminds me of Bosa. Well, that's awesome if you're getting Bosa, a healthy Bosa. The thing with Phillips is you've got to deal with that. You know, he walked away from the game.
Yeah,
he's had the wrist injuries. He's had the concussions. Mm-hmm. He's had the ankle injury. I mean, medical is going to ultimately decide.
Sure.
You know, whether or not a team picks him, it's not going to necessarily be up to the pro personnel director or the GM.
Well, and, you know, and this is a big weekend for the medicals. You know, they have over 150 players are going to be going to the medical checks in Indianapolis this weekend. So
yes.
I think that next week on our shows, we'll probably learn a little bit more about some medicals and, you know, some of the information that leaks out of there. But this is important for those guys because we're close. And this is usually when medical rechecks happen.
Right.
And so now that they've had an opportunity to at least get in front of these guys and have one athletic trainer, one doctor, is what I read this morning, they're going to be able to be there to check these guys. So that'll be interesting. And, you know, there should be some stuff that comes out of over the weekend that's good and bad, I would imagine.
I would think so. 973-667-1960 is our phone number if you'd like to get on the line. Limited Giants season tickets are on sale now for the 2021 season. In addition to ticket savings, membership benefits include access to exclusive events, experiences, pre-sales, and more. You can lock in your seats starting at just $100. Call 888-NYG-1925 or visit giants.com/tickets for more information. And don't miss out on your chance to experience a premier hospitality experience watching Giants games and world-class concerts in 2021 as a Giants Suite partner. Limited full-season locations are available. Or place a deposit for individual games. Call 888-NYG-1925 or visit giants.com/suites for more information. And finally, you can get a New York Giants checking account from Investors Bank with a Giants-branded debit card, security features, and discounts at the Giants online shop. You can earn up to $225 when you open an account at investorsbank.com/giants. Member FDIC. Jeff, we're going to the phone lines. Len from Columbia, Maryland is first on the show. Hi, Len.
Hi,
Len.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Well, how are you?
Good. Hanging in there. Hey, Jeff, on Monday's show, the guest made a kind of, I don't know if it was a throwaway line or not, but I'd like your thoughts on this. And he was very good, by the way, and this is not a criticism, but he commented that there are a lot of guys playing professional football who don't like football. I'm not looking for names, believe me. But what do you think about a comment like that?
I think it's true.
How close is it? You think it's true?
I think it's true. I really do. We had a guy. I'll give you an example. First round draft pick. When I was in Len, when I was in with the Eagles, that other team. Okay. The first round draft pick, Antone Davis from the University of Tennessee, came in as a first round draft pick. Dave Alexander, who was the center for that team, one of my best friends, told me that he told the team that after 4 years, I'm retiring, I'm taking my money, and I'm leaving. I hate football.
Wow.
And he did. He sure did.
Now, Jeff, do you think he hated it coming in?
I do.
I do. Okay.
Coming into college football?
No. Coming to the Eagles in that first year.
Yes. Yeah. I think that he muddled through the 4 years that he had to play there, and he wasn't a great player, but he was a decent player as a first round draft pick. But he ended up retiring after I think 4 years. I'm sure the Schmelk is checking my numbers right now.
Yeah.
But the fact is that.
I wasn't. Do you want me to?
No. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah, Len, and before you even get to your next question, I should just throw in the fact that I have known many players in the Giants locker room over my 35-plus years that have not enjoyed playing the game and would actually tell you that on their bye week or on Monday Night Football, they would not watch the other teams playing because they were not interested.
Well, Paul, I want to throw one name out there, and this is a guy that obviously worked very hard at his craft and put everything into his career. But I remember one guy we used to talk to that said he never watched football if he wasn't playing it. That was Jeremy Shockey.
Yeah.
Wow.
He said he never watched football. That doesn't mean he didn't work his butt off to be the best football player he could be.
But he didn't watch
it in his free time, which I thought was just I can't compute that. But I have heard that from people, to Paul's point.
That's because he was doing too many other things to watch football.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah.
Offensive tackle from Princeton, Jeff Hatch.
Yes, I remember him well. He had a bad back.
I think he ripped the Giants off.
I remember Jeff Hatch.
I'm just not sure he really wanted to do it.
Sure. Well, you know what? To be frank with you, I remember when he was selected. I think he might have been a third rounder.
Yes, early.
And I remember talking to one of the guys in the personnel department, and I said to him, I'm not sure why you guys did this. And he said, well, you know what? I think we overdrafted him, but we were really looking for, to try to hit a diamond in a rough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, boy. He was on injured reserve for a season and then never amounted to anything after that. He never played.
He hid that back injury in college.
That's one that you can hide.
He hit it pretty good.
So, anyway.
All of a sudden the back injury, came around. Okay,
Len, I don't think there's a lot of them, Len. I don't think there's a lot of them, but there are a few. That's for sure.
Well, outside of, let's say, Jeremy verbalizing, or the guy that John you know, said he knew, et cetera, who wouldn't watch football. I mean, is that one of your criterion? I mean, do you try to measure that, Jeff?
Well, I think it's...
I mean, you're going into the draft.
Sure. Well, I think that you ask, you know, you're asking those questions to people, like, you know, talk about work ethics, you know. You can tell people, Len, when guys that love the game, that absolutely just love the game for what it's worth, those are the guys that are showing up early. Those are the guys that are staying late. You can see that they're studying their craft. They're doing things that normal, like not, they love it.
The guys that stay around in the off season.
Yeah, they'll just, you know, you could tell that it's just in their blood. The guys that isn't in their blood, that they're just not into it, they're showing up minutes before the game, before the meetings. They're not staying out. You could just tell they're just kind of like just, they're buying time, you know.
Now, Len, to be fair, I would always rather have a guy on my team who loves the game and has fun at it. And that would be better. But I don't think it's a prerequisite.
Okay.
For me,
okay.
The
Good.
Prerequisite is right. What Dave Gettleman says.
Okay.
I don't want guys who love to win. I want guys who hate to lose.
Yeah.
Because
like
Jeremy Shockey, who didn't necessarily love the game, he hated to lose so much. He was such a competitor that he busted his butt 150% to be the best he could be because he hated to lose. And it's okay. If that's how you have to get to giving me 150% of your effort, then go right ahead and do it.
Let me go to the draft. I'm getting a little skittish about the 11th pick. I'm looking for value, but my criteria, including this whole thing about liking football, the opt-outs, off-field, injuries, measurables, all those things beyond what we think the guy can do, I'm just getting a little skittish. I can't find the value. Maybe my criteria is too hard, but I just can't. You know, let me give you a couple of names. I got it down. This may be just a little bit, and I hate to use the word, a little bit of a reach on one guy. I got it down to Vera Tucker and Surtain.
Okay.
You know, you get to the measurables, and you guys know my feelings on drafting a guy who weighs less than 180, and heck, Devonta Smith says he weighs 170. I mean, the 11th pick, I don't know if you can go there. You know, the Parsons off-field, the opt-outs. So I'm boiling down, and maybe I'm thinking, let's see if we can trade back somewhere. Now, I don't want to go too far, but, you know, that's where I'm. Are you guys skittish at all, or you just think there's – I mean, look at your conversation with the Miami guy about Phillips. I mean, the concussion, you know, the concussions, holy cow, with the 11th pick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If we're out in the fifth round or something, you know, maybe you take a chance, but, God, you can't do that at 11.
Well, you know what? Len, if you really feel that tentative at 11 and don't have a conviction on a guy, or for that matter, have a group of four or five guys that you feel really good about,
well,
then try to trade back a few spots.
Yeah.
Hope that there's still a quarterback on the board that some sucker wants to come up and get.
Yeah. I tell you who I think is going to be there, but I'm worried about the injury, but I really want this guy, Waddle. I really want Waddle from Alabama. But, boy, I'm worried about that. I'm worried about that foot.
Are you? Look, it's legit. It's a legit concern. Again, if the medical staff passes on him and says, you got it, thumbs up, he's fine, well, you know, there's a lot to like there.
Yeah.
You know, Len, real quickly, if you look at the theme, what's going on here with the first four picks in the draft, they're most likely going to be the quarterbacks, right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at this 11th pick as the 7th because, you know, we don't need a quarterback.
Right.
So those, you know, everything gets pushed down. So now when your numbers come up, so that 11th pick to us is really like a 7th pick.
Yeah.
So now you're able to kind of group those guys. And when you talk about Waddle and Smith, they're most likely one of those guys are going to be there.
Oh, yeah. I know.
And now you start talking about the offensive linemen.
Yeah.
They're most likely one of those guys is going to be there.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden – so to get skittish a little bit, I think you got to change your mindset and get a little excited about it because these are some serious prospects.
Oh, I know. But, you know my feeling. again, I'm repeating myself here, but drafting guys that weigh less than 180 pounds.
Okay, well, you could throw him out. That's fine if you want to.
Yeah, well, Len, trust me, Slater and or Sewell both weigh twice as much as the shrimps that you're concerned about.
There you go. Hey, listen, allow me a 30-second rant. I just want to report something here today. That third-string quarterback with Philadelphia, Sudfield, he found work. He got a contract. He signed with San Francisco.
Yes.
And I just want to say, once again, especially to Jeff, I will never forgive Peterson. I hope he never gets another job in the NFL. What he pulled that last night in Week 17.
Yeah.
Just awful.
Yeah.
Just awful.
Thank you, Len.
Thanks for taking my call.
Be well.
He got what was coming to him. Right?
973-667-1960 is our phone number. Our one phone line is now open. And by the way, did you see this? Jim Schwartz, the former Eagles.
Yeah, you talk about a guy that talked out of both sides of his mouth, right?
Yeah, you know, he was adamant.
He was retiring. And he had enough.
Done. I got finished.
I got physical problems.
Over.
I got health problems. I'm done. And then what happens?
All of a sudden, guess what? Now he's with the Titans.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to throw any stones at anybody's house. That's not what we're here to do. But it does kind of tell you that there's something awry with the fish in the refrigerator in Philadelphia. 973-667-1960 is our phone number here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Paul Dottino and Super Bowl champion partner Jeff Fiegel's with you. You can always hit us up on Twitter as well. Hashtag Giants Chat. I am at Giants WFAN. He is at Jay Fiegel's. Mm-hmm. Now, Jeff, we got another guy on the phone already. I was going to ask you something, but I don't want to make the poor caller wait. So we're going to go to line one, and Rick from Tampa Bay is next on the show. Hello.
Hi, Rick.
Oh, hey. What's up, hey, Paulie? What's up, guys?
Good to talk to you.
Hey, you know what? I saw a mock draft last night. I think it was on ESPN, and I had to pause my TV for a second because in the top 10 picks, yes, we're praying quarterback, our guy Pitts was not there. I'm like, you kidding me? Yeah, he wasn't there. And I looked at it again. I forget who did the draft, and it was legitimate there. And they had everybody on there. And I'm like, there was no Pitts. I go, that means the Giants can get him.
Rick, you know what's really scary? Yesterday, somebody gave me a National Beat Guys mock, and he didn't have Pitts gone in the top 10 either. And that would be the first time that I had seen a respectable mock allow Pitts to drop to 11.
That's why we both don't know the names of either of those guys.
I'm forgetting the guy who it was. But I will – well, you know why? Because I thought it was preposterous. I said to myself, I'm not even going to pay attention to this because it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But you get giddy like he was saying that there's still that chance. So that's –
so you're saying there's a chance.
It's just this draft, this whole Jets thing with San Francisco. It shook things up, and then now they're taking him and all this. So, I mean, it was exciting to see that. And I know, Jeff, we're all Pitts fans if we can get him. But I have a question for you. If the scenarios fall out the way we think they will, and obviously he won't be there, but if Parsons and Surtain happen to slip to us at that pick, who would you take between those two?
Surtain.
I probably would, too.
Yeah. Okay.
Now let me make something very clear, though, too. Because, yes, you've got the issues that you have to kind of sort through off the field. Now, if Coach Spence were to say, I know Parsons really well, and I would put my reputation on the line for this guy because I think he's okay.
Sure.
That would factor into my equation. And if I thought that I was going to play him strictly as a weak side or inside backer, now, if I put him on weak side, I'm not rushing him off the edge. I'm still not sold. That many people, and we had our Penn State guy on the show some time ago, and I said to him, I don't understand why people are saying he's going to be an edge rusher in the NFL. And he's like, you're right, he's not.
Yeah, he's.
I don't see that.
No.
He's just not. I think he's a 4-3 middle linebacker or an inside backer in a 3-4. That's really where I think he maxes out. Now, if you think that he's going to be, and he has tremendous range and athleticism. And yes, he does slice through the gaps and can blitz on the interior. So there's a tremendous amount of upside there. And if they really feel good about the cleanliness of his personnel file and they think he can be a dominant guy next to Martinez, well, you know what? I would not have a problem taking him. I would still probably take Surtain, but I could understand if they took Parsons. Sure. I really could.
So off the field issues aside, you're still weighing the two players. Surtain is the prospect to take. I would agree with that.
Well, because he's a cover corner.
He's an Alabama guy.
I mean, you know, cover corners, and let's not kid ourselves. The Giants are going to know a lot about him, too, because of the Crimson Tide connection.
Right. So, I have a question for you. We hear this jack of all trades, and it came out of last year. It was last year with Isaiah Simmons. What was your grade on his performance this year in the NFL? Because I know we talked about maybe getting him last year in the draft, and there's some guys that I keep hearing, John, everybody said that always like Isaiah Simmons. He could do this, he could do that. You don't know real hybrid, don't know where to play him. Because we have, there's a couple picks maybe in the second round that may come up. Did you think he had a good year, Simmons? I mean, I'm scratching my head to think, not that I saw too much of him.
The problem with Simmons is that the Cardinals did not know how to use him.
Sure.
They spent the whole first half of the season puzzled as to what to do with this guy. And see, now there's a fella who I did like. Despite all of the things that he could do, and there were a variety of assignments that he could handle, that was a guy who I literally thought could be a dynamic pass rusher.
We all did.
Off the edge.
We all did.
But that's not the way he was used with Arizona. So consequently, the whole first half of his season was basically a wash because they were trying to figure out what to do with him. Now, if you'll notice, in the second half of the year, his production got better. But I still don't think they figured out the best way to use him. And that's part of the problem. We all talked about it before the draft. If you don't know what you're going to do with him, it's kind of dangerous to take a guy. Because if you're not going to max him out, then what's the point in taking a guy who is going to come up short of his potential?
Right. Okay. Yeah, you know, a couple weeks ago, guys, we'll see. But I tell you, I was encouraged when I saw that. I had a pause, and I'm like, oh, gosh, Pitts.
I hear you. But anyway, I do feel the same way, though, about Parsons. If you're not going to use Parsons right, then you're cheating yourself, and you're only going with the glass half full, and it's not worth taking him at 11.
I'm going to let you go, but what would you give up to move up for a couple spots to get Pitts? What would be the most you'd give up on that?
I'm not moving up.
As much as I love him, I'm not doing it either. I was asked this question on Monday. I can't do it.
Well, John, you'd have to move to like 4, 5, or 6 is the problem.
Not happening.
Yeah, it's too much.
So
not happening.
You know, it's just and you never know.
You know why, Rick? I'm very happy with where the Giants are. As Jeff said, they're going to get the 7th best guy on their board in all likelihood because the 4 quarterbacks will be, you know, kind of on a shelf to the side. And I think that because of the value at the different positions that also match the Giants' needs, they're going to be fine at 11. I don't think they can go wrong here. I really don't.
Can I pose you guys a question?
Go ahead, John.
How do you value Parsons given, at least early in his career, his third down role is going to be as a blitzer, not as an edge rusher, Paul, as a blitzer from like an inside linebacker position because he really hasn't done a ton of coverage stuff yet.
Right.
How much do you value, you know, that role on third down for someone you would pick in the top 15?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that he can do that. He's very good at slicing gaps, John. So
that's a weapon. Right, but that's my point, though. Usually you want your linebacker to be a three-down linebacker to cover on third down, right?
You want a little
but
more play.
That's what you're not going to ask him to do. Is that still valuable enough for that to be worth a top 15 pick?
Well, it can be because you think that the Giants are of the opinion that they've already enhanced their secondary enough where they may not need that second backer to drop into a zone.
I'm to the point where, I mean, if I'm going to use my pick on that guy, I don't want just a special third down guy. I want him somebody that can do it all, you know?
Well, Jeff, I'll be honest with you. There's an awful lot he can do from that inside linebacker spot.
I understand. It was John's scenario that he presented.
He can do a lot on first and second down, but on third down right now, you're probably going to have him, if it's a passing down, he's going to primarily be a blitzer, right, rather than a coverage guy.
Well, yeah, because what you'll do is, if you were to take him, you'll probably drop Martinez into coverage. Parsons would come up the A gap or the B gap as a pressure package, and Martinez is going to be the guy who's going to fade into that short zone and try to cover guys over the middle. That's what you're going to do. And I understand that. You know, look, Parsons is a tremendous athlete, and I think if used correctly, he's going to be a terrific player, and I think he can give you impact as a rookie. But just don't use him as an edge rusher. Everybody who keeps saying that, just be quiet and go away. That's not the way to get the maximum value out of this guy.
He's a downhill inside linebacker that you want going at the opposing offense. That's what you want.
You don't want to be him and have him in coverage.
I've been telling people this for months, and there are a lot of people who still don't see that.
Listen, back to the picks. When you think about the luxury of 11, okay, and we're all kind of on the same page about the seven, you know, they're going to be the seven top guys. But look at where you can pick from. You might have a chance at offensive linemen. You might have a chance at wide receivers, edge rushers, cornerbacks. I mean, that you run the gamut here. You're going to have your pick of those positions, a quality, amazing football player. At the 11th pick.
That's why you don't trade, Jeff.
100%.
I am not moving.
Now, if somebody wants to come and give me the world to go get Parsons or somebody like Surtain or whatever, then I'll definitely listen. But it better be something really, really good, you know?
Yeah. I'd be willing to listen to move down a few spots. I would take that phone call. I don't know that I'm going to do it, but I'll take the call.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of calls, Nick from Brooklyn. Is on line one. Hello.
Hi, Nick.
What's going on, guys? How's it going?
Hi.
Good. Nice to hear you.
Cool. I just wanted to make a couple comments. I'm real excited about all the off-season moves that the Giants made. So just in terms of free agency, I had a question. You know, when you look around the league, the teams that made long-term investments, at least in free agency, and who were big spenders in free agency, two of them right at the top were the Patriots and the Giants. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering if you guys thought it was realistic that, you know, maybe Judge and Belichick or people within the Patriots organization and Giants organization talked about, you know, the upcoming implications of the salary cap, and they not decided together, but, you know, talked and just, you know, through communicating there decided that this was a good time to make some long-term contract investments because of how the cap could be moving in the years to come.
Well, I think that the cap, how do I answer this? Well, here's what I will say. John Mara admitted when he talked to the media just a short week or so ago that they were aware that the cap is going to move and that was part of their calculation in terms of some of the contracts that they did that did push money into ensuing years. Mm-hmm. He was aware of that. He understood it. He, you know, the Giants as an organization don't want to do that. They don't like to do that. But they did nudge the envelope just a little, understanding that the cap is expected to get better. Now, if that answers your question, then that's the answer. If that still doesn't answer your question, I don't know how much more we could really say because I don't know that there is anything else to say.
No, I think that answers the question. I mean, it's just pure speculation from my end.
Sure.
And I just found it interesting that those were two of the teams who were willing to make those long-term investments. But then in addition to the free agency stuff, I just had a couple comments about the draft.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I know we've been talking a lot today specifically about Parsons. I definitely think he's somebody who would be great for us at 11. I don't think that we should be targeting a cornerback or a wide receiver at 11. I mean, if it's Chase or if it's Pitts who are there at 11, obviously I would pull the trigger on them. But if it's Smith or Waddle, I just feel like they have too many question marks coming in, whether it be the, you know, the height and weight stuff for Devonta Smith, or Waddle doesn't have, you know, a ton of time on the field there where he was, you know, a number one or even a number two option in Alabama. So to take them at 11, I would rather wait to even the second or third round and roll the dice on a receiver then. And I think in terms of cornerback and with wide receiver, it'd be better for us to have some confidence in the investments we made in the offseason in Adoree Jackson and Galladay and then the other playmakers on the roster and address some other needs at 11. So Parsons, to me, I know you're saying you can't line him up on the edge, but I think he has the size to do it. It's not something you're going to want him to do every down, but you can definitely mix him in on the edge or use him as that middle linebacker. And then also, obviously, offensive line is a much more glaring need for us than I think wide receiver is or cornerback is, just based on the offseason acquisitions that we made.
I don't have a problem with anything you said, because what you can do with Parsons, you can stunt him and twist him with one of the ends. Okay, you know, if you want to line him up inside, you know, in the B gap, and then run a stunt and a twist, and all of a sudden he is coming around the outside, that's not a problem. I mean, you could certainly mix some stuff in like that, but my question to you is this: what if the Giants clearly have, let's say it's Waddle or it's Smith, I don't care, receiver X, well higher. Ranked on their board in terms of value than any of the other position guys? What if it's not really razor thin? What if it's a clear line of delineation that the receiver left on the board is significantly better than anybody else at 11?
I mean, I could definitely see them that. I think that they would be wrong, frankly, in their evaluation, that it's worth it to take a Waddle or a Smith at 11 when you could potentially, you know, you could even move down and take a different receiver like Bateman. In the second round, you could have a shot at, like, Rondell Moore.
Even Bateman is not going in the second round. There's no way.
Rondell Moore, you don't think so?
No, Bateman.
Oh, no, Bateman, I think you could move down in the first round and get him, though. You could potentially get Rondell Moore in the second round.
Yeah, but see, if this isn't about whether or not they want a receiver. This is about taking the best player available. And if the guy is ranked so much higher than the rest of the cluster that's left on their board, then they're going to take him as the best player available. They're not taking him because they say to themselves, we need a wide receiver.
Paul, can I interject? So I think what will happen here, too, is because of the addition of Galladay and the addition of Jackson, okay, it'll afford the opportunity for the Giants at the best player available is there, and it is a wide receiver, and maybe right below that player is a offensive lineman, so to speak. That is just, I mean, they are so, so close. But because they have Galladay in the free agency market and Jackson at the cornerback position, maybe they go and say, okay, you know what, we're gonna take another guy here. We're not going to take a receiver, which even though we have him a little bit higher than the next guy, but you know what? So maybe that's kind of where they go. But I think to answer your question and what you're saying, Paul, I agree with you. The Giants maneuver their draft board usually by best available player. So, you know, if that's going to be the wide receiver position or the cornerback position or the edge position, that's who you're going to get. And that's the way that they usually do it. So I understand what you're saying, and I think it's a good call. But I think that if we only knew what that darn draft board looked like, it'd make our shows a lot more interesting.
Well, again, it depends on how wide the gap is between the cluster of players you're looking at.
Well, it couldn't be that big of a gap because at the 11th pick, right? I mean, those guys are all going to be pretty darn close.
Chances are there's not going to be a wide gap, but there could be. We just don't know who those first 10 players are going to be. And the other part to this, Jeff, that does cause a player's grade to drop, the medicals and the personnel files.
That's right, and we'll find out a lot of it this weekend.
How much value on their board has Smith potentially lost? How much value has Waddle potentially lost? How much value has Parsons potentially lost? How much value has Rousseau potentially lost because of lack of experience? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of reasons to drop a guy's value on the board. So just because, you know, we all think that because we've seen some tape on a player that he has value at the 10th, 11th, or 12th pick in the draft, well, There's another three-fourths of that file that we have no idea what's in.
Quick question for you. Do you think that the Giants, maybe any other team, are they looking at these guys that opted out? Is that a huge problem for some of these people like Rousseau? Do Do you think that that is kind of the,
I think
the
it's
kicker?
A bigger problem for guys who don't have much on tape, like Rousseau, who's only got 1 year at Miami.
Right.
For a guy who started for 2 years or maybe even 3 years, if you're lucky, and then opted out, I don't think it's that big a deal.
Sure, sure.
So do we have one more we can squeeze in or no, John?
We do not.
We do not.
But Charlie did call in, and he's not going to go on the air, but he did want me to ask if you guys would be super concerned if Dallas traded up for Pitts and if that would motivate you to make that deal, Paul.
Okay. Let's go to the story where he got that from.
Yes.
Okay. Chris Mortensen, I believe. That's correct, right, John? Mortensen?
I'm not positive where it came from, but sure.
I'm pretty sure it was Mortensen at ESPN. Had reported, I believe, within the last 48 hours that Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner and GM and president and everything else, water boy and popcorn vendor, put out there, apparently to his people, that he just is so enamored with Kyle Pitts that it's off the charts.
He's been talking to Feagles.
Hey, yeah, there you go.
I sent him like a little post-it in an envelope. Hey, you should really think about this guy.
And
you
know? So, you know, he was basically just telling people that don't be shocked, despite a desperate need for defensive impact players and despite a need to reestablish some beef along that offensive line, that don't be shocked if Dallas decides Pitts is there. Got to take him because Jerry Jones loves him.
Well,
that was the story
Jones
that came
try.
Out.
Everyone loves him. If I was there at 10, I'd pick him too.
I get it.
So you're saying, but you're saying that he's going to go up. He may go up to get him.
Well, that's what Charlie's saying. Which is
that's what Charlie
is
saying. I don't believe that's what Mort was suggesting. I think Mort was suggesting that if he really wants Pitts that bad, he would have to go up to get him. But he wasn't necessarily professing that.
Okay. I could see him doing something like that. Because that's just Jerry Jones, right?
No, I think his son Steven is too smart to do that.
Yeah, Dallas hasn't. I'm trying to think. When's the last time Dallas traded up for something? I don't really
remember.
But
you are
that
correct, though.
I think
Steven has a governor. I think he's basically, you know, he has a governor a little bit. Because remember, was it the Manziel? Remember, they were the big thing about Steven?
Steven talked him out of Johnny Manziel.
Well, I think it wasn't the story that he, like, grabbed him about, like, the, like, suit jacket and, like, put him against the wall or something crazy like that?
Steven was adamant. Steven is the one who fixed and rebuilt the Dallas offensive line.
Sure. Well, I'm not only am I going to be sick this time, I will be more sick than you will if the Dallas Cowboys are on the clock and Pitts is still there.
Well, the sad thing is that the Eagles can't get any more, which I really wanted to see Paul's reaction to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's only one way to look at this, and I had a guy actually send me this, John. I think he was trying to play off of you, like you like to stick me in the kidney with a needle, you know? and he was sending me the story about Mortensen and Pitts and Jerry Jones, saying, oh, you know, that'll be your worst nightmare. Well, you know, that's not a team's worst nightmare, okay? It's terrible. When the guy, the apple of your eye, the best player you think in the draft, you know, winds up getting taken by somebody in your division, sure, that stinks. That's just painful. But the worst nightmare you could have is when your first-round draft pick is a bust. That's your worst nightmare. The guy that you take in the first round turns out to be zero.
Okay, so to that point, before we say goodbye, I'm going to put one question to you two guys, and we'll close the show with this.
Mm-hmm.
If these three players are sitting there for you to choose from, who do the three of you select?
Okay.
Surtain, Waddle, or Smith. I'll give you the choice of either one. Or Slater.
You want mine first?
Yeah, I don't care.
I'm going with Slater. I will take Slater.
And who would be your second and third choice in that?
Then I would go defense, and then I would go offense.
Oh, you have Surtain ahead of the two wide receivers, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Paul, how about you?
Ditto.
Thank you, Paul.
I would go Slater, the two wide receivers, then I would go Surtain third.
But we all agree on the offensive lineman.
Yep.
Because he can play both positions. Right? Right guard, right tackle, right?
Can't go wrong. Can't go wrong when you fortify the front. Can't do it. Can't do it. All right, guys. It's been fun.
Yeah,
we thank Manny Navarro of The Athletic, the Hurricanes beat reporter, who had a lot of stuff to say about the Miami prospects and made Jeff Feagles very happy.
Yes, he did.
You know, we could have gotten him to talk about Kyle Pitts. I mean, he's in Florida.
No, I think we've talked enough about Kyle Pitts.
But in any event, folks, once again, remember, Big Blue Kickoff Live is here every single weekday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time live, or always you can get it on the Giants app. I got to read that spot, which I just wiped off my screen. Here it is. The episode is available as part of the Giants Podcast Network, brought to you by Investors Bank, on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at giants.com/podcasts. Jeff, we will talk to you again soon. Enjoy.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, John. Have a good weekend, everybody.
We'll see you next time, folks.